Good morning, folks. Welcome to the Solar Fit Renewable Energy Show. This is Bill Gallagher with you today, and we have a very exciting guest, a very famous guest, in my opinion, and that is Colonel Jack Howell, retired with the U.S. Marine Corps. Colonel Howell, welcome to the show.
Hey, thank you, Bill.
I don't know how we were fortunate enough to get you to take some of your time to stop by here today, but I'm pretty jazzed about this.
Well, thank you. I appreciate your enthusiasm. I'm just as enthused to be out here with you.
Well, great. We've got an event coming up here pretty soon, don't we?
Yes, sir. We do. And Roy Sager did a great job out there at the airport putting this event together there.
They got a bunch of really cool planes flying in. This is, of all the events, of course, my favorite. I can't wait to get out there. And, of course, Mr. David Ayers with WNZF makes it very special for both of us, all of us, really.
Yeah, David's quite a guy.
Yeah, I mean, I think everybody in Flagler County goes to this event.
Just about, yeah. You know, it's for all the ones that I've participated in, it's always been grand slammed.
So what do they got coming in now? They've got
They got the Avenger, and they've got a host of other aircraft of different varieties. I think they've got a pit coming in, you know, and of course they'll have helicopters there, and the L-9, I think, is going to be there. That's the Russian jet. And he's put together quite a package. I think they got a B-25. I'm not sure.
Wow, that's
exciting. You know, but we'll see what he's got planned here, you know. And weather-wise, hopefully it'll all go great.
Well, we've already put in for some good weather. That's going to happen for sure.
Well, I've ordered it.
It's
a direct order.
Well, we're going to have a booth out there. SolarFit's going to have a booth, and we're going to talk a little bit about that in a minute. But, Jack, you've been involved in something for many years called Teens in Flight. If you don't mind, let's talk a little bit about that.
Sure, absolutely. When I was on active duty as a Marine officer, there were times that I was tapped to be the casualty assistance officer, which means that I'm the guy that's going to make the death notification. And there were time constraints. We had to beat the telegram, officially notifying the family, you know, of a death. And so right after I made the notification, then I'm with that family to assist them in every way I can and to follow the military protocols for the funeral, etc. And then, after the funeral is over, I go back to my normal duties. But a couple weeks later, I go back and give them the VA paperwork for a headstone and stuff of that nature. But I've always noticed the kids, especially when they were teenagers, you know, how they were reacting to the grief. And the sad thing is that once the family is now separated from the active duty side of the house, they're on their own. There are no programs that will help in the counseling for PTS. And, of course, we didn't have a name for it back then. Now we do, and it's a real thing. And so I was very concerned about that. And I decided I had to do something. And I wanted to do something that was unique and over the top, something that a kid wouldn't think possible in a million years. And I thought, well, I know that we've got a shortage of airline pilots coming up, so why don't I get these kids a private pilot license for free, because their parent paid the ultimate price. And then instead of, you know, taking them to Disney World or some other place where the experience is great, but they don't have anything after that. Here, they're going to get a tangible asset in their hand, which will unlock the door to a possible career in the aerospace program. And that's our premise of our program. And then we also included not only the fallen warrior, but the wounded warrior who was severely disabled, and the first responders, especially what happened in Dallas with the murder of those police officers. And then we also took some kids at risk, because there's young men and young ladies out there that people have written off because they don't have the economic advantage or other issues of parenting that they needed. And we kind of parent them and mentor them, and they turn out to be pretty sharp kids. And that's what we do, and we've been doing it now for 12 years, close to 13.
Well, and I had a chance to look at your website and see some of the statistics. They're absolutely phenomenal. You know, we were speaking yesterday about how you and I. Now, we're not that old, are we?
Yeah. No, we're not, really, all things considered.
We're not that old. But when we were growing up, we were hanging on the fence at every airport.
That's
we,
right.
We would do anything to get a plane ride. We were so enthused about it.
That's right.
And now it's kind of, there just doesn't seem to be, I think it's just the kids now are involved in video and things like that. And what you're doing to get them out and expose them to what I consider to be the most freedom-seeking activity of all, flight. Right, I just applaud you for that. In addition to the other things you're doing, you're helping people find potentially a career.
Exactly. That's why I say that license will open that door. It's the first step, but more importantly, is that it's a healing step too, because I'm using that as a conduit to heal. Aviation is a passion that once I level the aircraft off. And I tell the young person, all right, take the yoke, and this is what you're going to do. And then we do a little bit of a turn, which would be the roll, a little pitch up, a little pitch down, and then play with the rudders and, you know, squish it from side to side there. And now you've had the airplane move on all three axes. Take control of the plane and let me see what you can do. And then once they realize that they're actually flying and they look at me with that Chelsea-eating grin, I got you. You know, you've got the passion now. And it's just a wow event. And for me, that's my paycheck, because none of us involved in Teens in Flight get a paycheck. I won't allow it. You know, we're a charity, and I believe that charities need to take care of the product first. And the product, in our case, are the kids. Now, yes, we the funding that we get, we actually, you know, need it for aircraft maintenance and fuel. And then the supplies that we give the kids for their ability to do the ground school.
Well, the other thing that I think is interesting is not only do you take their mind off what's happening currently, but once you do this, and it never leaves you. You're thinking about it at night in the dreams. Of, okay, now what am I going to do? How can I get better at this? It's incredible.
Yeah. And the other thing too, I had a young lady one day I took for an orientation flight, and she had just lost her dad to cancer, and you know it was kind of a grief situation. And I said, hey, you know what, young lady, here, open that window. And of course, in a Cessna, you can do it. Now stick your hand out. And she did. I said, now you just touch your dad's face. You know,
incredible.
And she said, wow, I never thought about that. Yeah, that's what it is.
Well, you've made such a tremendous impact in Flagler. And I think now you're working with Embry-Riddle and some of it.
Right, we're working with Embry-Riddle. But the other thing, too, is that our charity is a national charity. I mean, wherever a youngster is that meets our qualifications, I can set it up right in their hometown for them to fly.
Really?
Yeah, really. They'll do the ground school through us, and then I'll work with the flight school that we're contracted to, and we'll pay the flight tuition for them once they've met the requirements. Now, we do things a little bit differently, and that started with a little trial and error, because I want to know if you're serious. And a regular flight school, they'll give you a few lessons, take you out, fly, and lessons. And some of them are unscrupulous. They don't really care if you finish or not. They got your money. In my situation, I want to make sure that you're serious. And so I make them do the ground school first. Oh, I'll give them a teaser flight here and there. But I want you to do the ground school first. And once you've completed it and have taken your FAA written exam, then I'll fly it. Then it's all fun from that point on. But I learned the hard way. I had kids that just, they would not do the ground school. And it wasn't any reason other than you had to apply yourself. You had to do the work. So, no, flying, that was great. So I said, nope, no more. This is how we're going to do it. And so that's the way we've been doing it for the last 10 years.
It gets back to the discipline we talked about earlier.
That's right. It's self-discipline. You know, aviation, we teach, you know, the checklist is everything. But that induces one to think about their responsibility and their accountability. You know, for the first time in their life, they're really accountable, because if you muck it up, you're likely to die, because the airplane is unforgiving. And that's why we have checklists, you know.
So let's talk about the checklist a little bit, because we've had some experiences. You've flown long enough, you've had some experiences, and sometimes you really have to not only pay attention to the checklist, but if something distracts you, you need to go back to where you were and start over. You can't just motor on through that, because you're going to do something else.
Well, that comes back to the three guiding principles: aviate, navigate, communicate. But most importantly, you got to aviate. And once you figure out what's going on, then you worry about where you're going to put the airplane, and you navigate to that place. And then, of course, once you're all set, then you communicate what your issue is. And it's a standard thing. So, and we teach them that. But more specifically, you teach them the importance of the checklist. And there will be times that I'll purposely sabotage the airplane, on the ground, that is, and, tell the youngster, all right, go out and check the aircraft. Do your pre-inspection check. And then when they come back, say, hey, it's good to go. I said, oh, really? Really? Okay, well, what about this? And then they look in horror. I said, see, that's all it takes. Is it, oh, my God. Yeah. Oh, my God is better on the ground than, oh, my God, up in the air.
Exactly. Well, so take me through just the initial first flight with one of the people, when they first get on the plane, and then you give them the instructions and stuff, and they go to take off. What do you see? Do you see awe? Do you see a little bit of fear?
I see anxiety. Exactly. Yeah, that's the first thing, because they don't know what's going to happen. They've seen the films, and they have a general concept. But that's before you're doing the real thing, And I explained to them, hey, the airplane will take off by itself once it reaches its airspeed. And you can thank Mr. Bernoulli for that and his coming up with the concept of the changing of the pressures on the wing. But more specifically, I said, you're in control. And you don't want to pull all the way back on that yoke, because you're not an F-4 Phantom or an F-18 or an F-35. You don't have the power. You don't have that thrust. So you're going to have to climb out at no more than 500 feet per minute in the little prop jobs, not 2,000 feet per minute.
Right. So what do you have as far as aircraft there?
Well, we have a Cessna 150. I purchased that on my own and titled it in Teens in Flight. And then last year we bought a Piper, I think a 1978 Piper Archer II, and now we also lease a Cessna 172, a 1978 Cessna. Right. And so probably if we raise enough funds, we'll purchase another aircraft. And I should say that we don't owe anybody anything. These aircraft are paid for, So if you look at the credit report, you'll see we're debt-free, because I won't allow that.
So you're talking about a high wing and a Cessna?
High wing and a low wing, the Piper. Yeah.
So do you have the students train in both?
Primarily the Cessna. It's easier for them to fly the Cessna.
Okay.
The other thing, too, with the Cessna, you really can't, if you got the altitude, you can put it in a spin and it'll self-correct.
Right.
As long as you don't muck it up. Right. Do the opposite of what you're supposed to do.
Years ago when you and I got our licenses, spin was part of the testing, was training, and they don't do that anymore, right?
We don't do the spins.
Right.
We talk about it, but there have been some issues. Let's not go there. Let's keep the ball centered,
Well, the 150, the 172, 182, whatever, they're really a very docile plane, very forgiving when it comes to not so much on the Piper. You got to pay a little bit closer attention to that. But well, it sounds like you've got some wonderful thing. Now, when the kids come, how do you know which one to put them on? Everybody knew it goes.
Everybody goes to the Cessna. Yeah. We don't use the Piper for this. We'll use the Piper if we get somebody that wants to get checked out. In some respects, that's our money maker. The Piper. Because these are pilots that want to get recertified and things of that nature.
Right. And you keep them all in Flagler Airport?
Oh, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Okay, great. Mm-hmm. Well, folks, we're going to have to take a short break. Stay with us. We'll be right back.
It's the 5th annual Freedom Fest. One big day to celebrate America. It's a fly-in warbird parade at noon with over 50 aircraft, military displays, skydiving, thrilling RC air shows, collector car show, rock concerts, and fireworks. Don't miss the historic World War II B-25 bomber featured in the movies Catch-22 and Doolittle's Raiders. Freedom Fest, Saturday, November 16th at the Flagler Executive Airport. On the concert stage, Patrick Gibson, plus tributes to 38 Special, the Doobie Brothers, and Lynyrd Skynyrd. It's a full day of family fun with a spectacular Santori fireworks finale at 8:45. Gates open at 10 with static displays, lots of food, and Budweiser under the Tito's Entertainment tent.
Freedom Fest, a time for us all to celebrate America and honor our veterans. This is your state representative, Paul Renner. I'll see you there.
Freedom Fest, all day, Saturday, November 16th at the Flagler Executive Airport. Details at FlaglerBroadcasting.com.
Hi, folks. Welcome back to the Solar Fit Renewable Energy Show. This is Bill Gallagher, and I'm here with my friend, Colonel Jack Howell. I hope you caught the first part of it. If you didn't, rewind it, because it was awesome talking about teens in flight. Jack, you have had one heck of a career, and to pick something like this, this benevolent nature in retirement, to me is awesome, what you're doing for the kids. But can you go back a little bit on where did you grow up initially?
Well, I was kind of a service brat. But I guess my initial early roots was on the Jersey Shore. And once I graduated from college, I went to Monmouth University. Back then it was Monmouth College. And went right into the Marine Corps on active duty in 66. I enlisted in the platoon leaders class program in college in 61. And then graduated, went right on active duty. And then before I could blink my eye, I was in Vietnam. I was controlling airstrikes as a forward air controller and all that good stuff. I was in Quezon, got wounded in Quezon in 68. During the Tet Offensive, it was a wonderful 4th of July every day there. You know, you just boom, boom, boom. And then, I can understand where Francis Scott Key, by the dawn's early light and the rocket's red glare. Well, we got all that and then some. But then I came back, and as I was telling you before, I ended up, I think one of the highlights of my earlier career was I was aide de camp to Marion Carl. Major General Marion Carl was an icon in Marine Corps aviation, and he was the Marine Corps' first ace in the Pacific. He was also the Marine Corps' first helicopter pilot, and to fly with him. And we used to fly the F-4 Phantom everywhere we went, if we were going out of state for whatever reason he had to do. And then later on in life, I switched over to the military police side of the house, and I became a provost marshal. But then I found out one thing. Once I made major, and they caught up with me, they being the Corps, and they said, "Boy, you're coming to Washington, D.C., to headquarters Marine Corps." I had no idea where it was. I tried to avoid that place. And then I became a staff officer, and my principal job was mobilization of the Marine Corps Reserve. I was the mobilization plans and policy officer. And that was a pretty awesome responsibility, and I did a number of unique things, programs that are still implemented today. And then from there, I had a split and went over to the Joint Chiefs of Staff and was working with the J-4, again, in NATO reserve plans, looking at how they operated their reserve forces. And then I ended up in New Orleans with the 4th Marine Division. Now, the division is a reserve division. Oh, I spent time in Chicago at the Naval Air Station. I was with the 4th Marine Aircraft Wing. That's when I got to headquarters Marine Corps, and then ended up going to the 4th Marine Division as an active duty staff member in the War Plans Department and Force Structure. And then I ended up, as soon as I got selected for colonel, within a week, I had orders to the staff of the Secretary of Defense, and so I was in D.C. And those were just some of the highlights. Now, I went to the standard schools, and I did graduate from the Naval Fighter Weapons School in 74, and that's better known as Top Gun. And then I went to Marine Corps Command and Staff College. I went to Naval War College, picked up a master's degree at Pepperdine University, and then I retired in 1990, and then I went into combat. And I taught junior ROTC in inner city schools. My first school was in New York City. And dealing with the high school, it was unique, you know. I saw the raw product before it got to Parris Island, and what I saw I wasn't pleased with, you know, the little Nintendo Commandos, that's what they were. The only exercise I got was running from the school bus to their video games, and it was pathetic. You know, I remember having to climb a rope, you know, the Marines climb these ropes, and I'm looking at these weaklings trying to get up there, and I said, look, guys, I'm 50 years old. Here I am up here. You're 17. What the heck's the matter with you? You know, you can get maybe a third of the way up. Come on now. Where's your upper arm strength? Ah, it's in your fingers from Nintendo. I got you. You know, and then from there I went to Waterbury, Connecticut, and Rahway, New Jersey. I learned the right way and the raw way, as they used to say. And then I ended up in Jacksonville. And the neat thing about that, when I was an undergrad in college, I worked my way through school, and in the summers I worked as an ocean rescue lifeguard, and those skills never left. So that's what I wanted to do. I thought, well, I'll do a career in the Marine Corps, and I'll teach, and then the summers are off, and I'll lifeguard. Yeah, that's just a passion. Well, I ended up running the ocean rescue in Jacksonville. This not the beach, but the city of Jacksonville. And I did that for almost 20 years. And it was great, a great summer gig. And then I taught for the Sheriff's Academy up there, had my FDLE certifications, and I did that for a couple of years when all of a sudden I found out, hey, why am I commuting up here? I can stay at home and teach online. So now I teach graduate and undergraduate courses for a couple of different colleges. And my specialty is terrorism.
That is the most incredible
resume
I have ever had a chance to.
You know?
Oh, man.
I'm currently a student at Harvard. I'm in their executive leadership, senior executive leadership program. I got one more class to take, and then I'll have a certificate in public leadership.
Well, folks, if you're listening, Jack says, look, this isn't about me. I don't want to talk about me. I am so glad that he talked about it because this is an incredible career. Hey, let me go back a little bit. In Vietnam, the bird dog, you flew in the bird dog back then?
No, on the ground. I was attached to the grunts.
Oh, my God.
You know, right, yeah. Yep. Directing tactical air command and control strikes.
One of the most difficult periods.
Oh, yeah, ever. And dropping bombs. Yeah. You know, oh, yeah. That was, something else. Yeah. But, Kaysan definitely is deep in my mind, you know. But the whole experience is, it's a sad experience because you find out that with all that was going on politically and non-politically, the cause of the war, this, that, and the other, we ended up fighting for each other. Yeah. You know, it wasn't about the country's needs because we didn't really have any needs over there, you know. Initially, I thought we did, but then we were deceived, you know. And if you read H.R. McMaster's book on Vietnam, that'll open your eyes.
I have, and my hope and prayer is that the history is conveyed correctly to the new people coming up,
right.
Because sometimes it seems to be lost, and that's why I think it's important to have opportunities like this to explain this to people. This was a huge thing for our country, and thank you for your service.
Well, you're more than welcome. You know, I've always been a student because if you're a professional warrior, you got to be on top of your game, and I think that Jim Mattis is tops as a general officer in the Marine Corps, and what he did along with Al Gray back in 1987. Al Gray, who was our commandant at the time, and he had been prior enlisted as a staff sergeant before he got commissioned. He was all about professional education, you know, and some of us that had read Clausewitz's On War and Sun Tzu, but, you know, On War, things of these nature, it gives you a good concept of what needs to win a war. You know, I remember the first book I read was A Soldier's Load and a Nation's Mobility, as a second lieutenant. And, of course, I read the three volumes of Lee's Lieutenants. And so you have to be a student, just like in anything else. If you're a history teacher, you need to know your history. If you're a math teacher, you need to know your math and things of this nature. Well, as a warrior, I need to see all of these things because I don't want to repeat the same stupid mistakes, which will be right there if you let.
Yeah, understand, you know? Understand. Well, awesome job. Awesome job, Jack. So let's talk back a little bit about Teens in Flight. Now, it seems, I think I heard you say that you're a recruiter too. You go out to these schools to try to find people that are...
Right. I look for the kids primarily in our school system. And I also want to tell you, I work with the Tragedy Assistance Program for Survivors. And these are kids who have lost a parent or a sibling. And we get some of our kids from that program. But, you know, I also, when I go to the local schools, I look for kids who maybe are from single-family homes and are struggling, you know, with the lack of a two-parent system. And financially, you know, they're just hanging above water, payday to payday type of deal. And I want to give those kids an opportunity. You know, I had two young ladies when I first started the program. And one of them, I got into the West Point. You know, and I told her, I said, you know, a lot of people didn't believe in you here. I did, you know, so we'll show them. And then she's a captain right now in the Army.
Wow.
And then, but I remember distinctly, I asked the kids, I had seven of them, and they were all seniors at the time. This is my first year. I said, well, you know, anybody want to go to the junior senior prom or whatever it was? And I was looking at the two girls. No, we don't want to do that. We'd rather go to the Disney thing, whatever they used to have a night at Disney World. I forget what it was called.
Right.
But I said, well, you want to do that? No, we can't because we already, you know, missed a sign-up. I said, do you want to go? That's all I want to know. Yeah. Well, yeah, all right, you're going to go. I'll make it happen. And I gave them each $100 out of my own pocket. Now, have a good time. So when they came back, they had some excess money, you know, left over. I said, well, you keep it, but just remember the generosity down the line. And the other young lady, she's with the State Department now, and she speaks Mandarin Chinese proficiently, and just great kids. And, you know, what they didn't know is if they had wanted to go to that prom, by God, they were going to go to the prom in new gowns and the whole hair and all that. So I was prepared to dole it out because my payment was to see the joy in their face. Right. That's the bottom line.
Yeah.
You know, it's not about, you know, anything tangible. I don't need that at my age.
Yeah.
You know, just to make somebody happy.
You're what, 46?
Yeah,
something 40, like that.
Well, no, I think I regressed to 39, as Jack Benny said.
Jack Benny.
Now, actually, I'm 76.
76.
Actually. And I'm still kicking butt and taking names.
Well, you're heavily muscled, and you're ready to go, I'll tell
yeah,
you.
Yeah, I stay in pretty good shape.
Jeepers. If you didn't have that darn mic, I'd arm wrestle you. Thank God he's got the mic. Remember that day?
Hit you on the head.
I can lick any Marine in the house. Whoop, hope there's no Marines in the house. Jack, what can people do to help your cause? I mean, you're putting so much time and effort and your own money into it. How can we get the communities to support
well,
us?
Well, you know, if they want to support us, first off, they'll be at the Flight Festival or I forget what the name is, Freedom Fest.
Right.
Yeah. And the other part of it is, you know, we have a website, and they can certainly send us a donation. We are a 501c3. And they can contact us at, and we just changed our phone number, but they can contact me at 386-569-5685, you know. And we'll be more than happy to discuss with them if anything they like, you know. We are basically 100% on grants and donations. That's how we survive.
Fantastic. Well, we're gonna definitely make a donation ourselves to the cause, but we're gonna also keep our eye out for people that we think would be good candidates.
Sure. Yeah, we're always looking for, you know, people that want to support us because, you know, unlike other charities, and I put my integrity on the line here. Okay, and I learned that integrity is like virginity. Once you lose it, you can never get it back.
Right.
And, you know, that's how they explained it to us in Officer Canada School. Boy, integrity, next to virginity. Okay, yes, sir.
Well, something cool, too, is if you stop by the SolarFit booth on the day of the Freedom Fest and you make a small donation, you'll be able to, and this donation's going to Teens in Flight. It's going to be well used. You're going to have an opportunity to win a ride in an aircraft. We're not going to tell you what it is, but we're going to tell you it is an awesome, awesome aircraft. Jack, thank you so much. We're about out of time today. I really, really appreciate you coming in. Colonel Jack Howell, thank you, sir.
Well, thank you for allowing me the opportunity to jibber-jabber a little bit with everybody. I appreciate it.
Awesome. Well, folks, we're going to call it a day right now, and we will see you out to Freedom Fest. Everyone have a wonderful weekend. We'll talk to you.
SolarFit Renewable Energy Radio Show, paid for by SolarFit.